This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, Ti Xiao Yik. Our joints are important when it comes to carrying out daily activities. So when the joints start to get swollen, stiff or inflamed, one thing that comes to mind is some form of arthritis. We are talking about rheumatoid arthritis in particular today. Now, while a cure for this condition is out of the question, can we preserve your quality of life? And are we getting any closer to understanding why the immune system attacks itself? We have in the studio with us today Dr. Sarina Kemper, consultant rheumatologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. And she'll, of course, be going through all the basics about rheumatoid arthritis with us. How are you today, Dr. Sarina?
Hi, I'm doing well, thanks.
All right. Remember, you can call us if you have any questions for Dr. Sarina. Our number is 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet them over at BFM Radio. Dr. Sarina, I think for most of the average person understands arthritis as painful joints, and we tend to associate it with the older age. But it's a lot more than that, isn't it, the term arthritis? So could you explain what that umbrella term means?
Yeah, so I mean, arthritis, I guess for the lay person, they think of it as, you know, pain in their joints. But actually, arthritis can be divided into different classes. So there's osteoarthritis, which is what we call the wear and tear type of arthritis. That's what happens when, you know, people grow older. Those affect mainly the weight-bearing joints like your knees or your hips. And those are the ones that people frequently, you know, talk about having knee replacements and hip replacements and so forth. But rheumatoid arthritis actually falls under a different category. That's inflammatory arthritis. So inflammatory arthritis, or in other words, an autoimmune type of arthritis, is when your body's immune system, instead of attacking, you know, foreign things like bacteria or viruses, starts to attack itself. So in rheumatoid arthritis, the autoimmune area which it attacks is the lining between the joints, or the synovium. Other forms of autoimmunity, like psoriasis, so the body's immune system attacks the skin, or, so that's one example, basically.
So what gives rise to the condition of rheumatoid arthritis where the autoimmune system would attack the joints?
So why does rheumatoid arthritis happen?
Yes.
I suppose that's a very complex question, and we don't actually have an answer as to why. There are several factors involved. Initially, I mean, the main factor is someone has to have a genetic predisposition to getting it. So you are susceptible to getting rheumatoid arthritis. And we see that because it runs in families. You know, there's some people have rheumatoid arthritis in the families, but it's not directly inherited in that sense.
Right.
So one is genetic predisposition. But then something else happens in your life, because not everyone who has this genetic predisposition will get rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm.
So something happens in the environment. We call these environmental triggers. It could be like a viral infection, or, you know, external stress, or something that upsets the system that switches that autoimmune switch on.
Mm.
And then rheumatoid arthritis happens. And once that autoimmune switch is on, we can't switch it off again.
Right.
We can control it, but we can't switch it off.
Is it particularly common in Malaysia, or are we seeing general trends of the disease?
Yeah, we don't actually have specific statistics for the epidemiology in Malaysia. We have worldwide statistics which say that it occurs in about 0.5 to 1% of the population, which equates to about 1 in 100 or 1 in 200 people will get rheumatoid arthritis.
All right.
And
that jives with what you're seeing in your practice?
Yeah, that's right. So I worked in Australia as well before this, and again, there was a lot of rheumatoid arthritis, but it's very similar here as well.
All right. So, I mean, what are the, you've talked about genetic predisposition, excuse me, being a major risk factor and the environmental triggers that may cause it to kick in, so to speak.
Right. Yep.
Say, what are the other risk factors? For instance, is gender one of them?
So gender or hormonal, I suppose, influences is one of the risk factors, because we see that women tend to get more rheumatoid arthritis than men. So they are three times more likely. Mm. So hormones do play a part. We're not exactly, you know, certain as to how it does, but with that comparison, it does.
There are a lot of mysteries about the condition, aren't there?
Yes.
So, you know, looking then into sort of how would you identify a condition as rheumatoid arthritis, what are the common symptoms of it?
So the most common presentation I would see for rheumatoid arthritis is basically the fact that it affects your joints. And in particular, it tends to go to the small joints, so your hands or your feet. But it can also affect your wrists, your ankles, your shoulders, but less so than the, you know, usually people describe their small joints being affected first. Mm. It's quite symmetrical as well. So it's common to have it in both sides of the body at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
They describe pain and obvious swelling as well. And the pain is also more common at night. So people have trouble sleeping. Or when they first wake up in the morning, when you think you're supposed to have rested and you feel better, it's actually worse in the morning.
Oh, right.
People describe stiffness in the early mornings when they first get out of bed, typically lasting more than half an hour. But as they start to move, it starts to feel a bit better. But it again returns if you have a period of rest. Let's say you're sitting down for a long period of time. Again, it starts to, you know, feel like the joints have gelled up. That's what people like to describe. Other things, I suppose, it can cause patients to feel very fatigued because it's a systemic disease. It affects every part of you, and your body is constantly trying to fight something. So your body gets really worn out by that and feels really tired.
Right.
And people also, you know, people with rheumatoid arthritis commonly describe feeling low or depressed or sad because of the pain, because of the joint pain and swelling, and because it now limits their function, their movement. Yeah. So that's quite a common presentation.
Could it be mistaken for other conditions?
I suppose mainly one of the main downsides to the diagnosis is that people put it down to just getting old.
Mm.
So they think, oh, my joints are aching, I'm just getting old, I'm just going to ignore it. But that shouldn't be the case. It shouldn't be normal to have, you know, such pain that it limits your everyday activity. I mean, there are different types of inflammatory arthritis, like I said, rheumatoid arthritis or psoriatic arthritis, or even arthritis, inflammatory arthritis that affects your spine, so ankylosing spondylitis. Mm. But they all have the same inflammatory type of pain, which is this pain that is not typical, that occurs at night, is worse in the mornings. The wear and tear type of pain from osteoarthritis is different.
Mm.
That's when you have pain after you've used your joints for a period of time. You know, you've been walking, done a holiday anywhere, you've done a lot of walking, and then after that it hurts. But this is quite the opposite.
Right. And it's the inactivity where you are sort of immobile for a period of time, and then you notice the stiffness and the pain.
Right. Mm.
But I'm wondering also, you know, from the time that it's switched on, you said, and to when the symptoms develop, how acute or how slow does it take for your joints to swell up and all
that? Yeah, that actually varies very much from person to person. Some people's rheumatoid arthritis can be quiet for a long period of time. Some people's, it comes and goes.
Mm.
Some people's, it starts and it's aggressive from day one, and it very quickly progresses and erodes the joint. So it's very different between person to person.
Right.
But that's why it's important to, you know, get an opinion from someone who does know.
Okay. And what's the disease progression like throughout your lifetime?
So the disease will progress throughout your lifetime, but again, it could be it could take a short time for you to have bad disease. Or some people, you know, have rheumatoid arthritis for 30 years and yet their joints are pretty much well preserved. But one of the key factors in determining disease progression is that is about treatment. Mm. So the earlier we get treatment, ideally within 6 months of diagnosis, the earlier we get treatment, the better your outlook is.
Right.
Because then we can stop the disease from progressing. We can stop the joint damage. We can stop the disability and all of that.
Mm. I mean, yeah. So what would you define as bad disease? I assume the damage to the joints
falls
that's right. under that.
Yeah. So bad disease, if someone has a lot of joints, you know, the joint count is high. It's very painful, very swollen. But when it gets, when it actually starts damaging the joints, the bones itself, when it starts eroding the bones, then that's when it's irreversible. And that's what we want to try and prevent, irreversible damage. Mm. Because if it continues for a long period of time, damaging the bones, that's when you see all these deformities. If you have ever seen in you know, in the internet or pictures of people with really, you know, awful looking hands, that's your bad rheumatoid arthritis, when you can't even use your hands anymore, you can't even pick up keys, pick up, you know, money to pay for things,
right.
you can't hold a pen. It stops your everyday activities. So that's, you know, what we want to prevent.
Okay.
The good news is, I suppose, that we hardly see, if you are treated, we hardly see those bad changes because the medication that we have available now is really quite effective.
How do you diagnose the condition, though?
Yep. So diagnosis is not straightforward because we don't have like a single blood test that can confirm rheumatoid arthritis. It takes, obviously, a rheumatologist is usually the one to diagnose rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, evaluate your history, look at your symptoms, how long you've had them, look at your actually physical condition. Do you have any joints that are swollen and tender? We can check blood tests as well to see whether there's inflammation in the body.
Mm.
And there are even some antibodies that we can check, but they are not 100% relating to the susceptibility of the disease. So we have rheumatoid factor, for example, on blood tests. But 30% of people who have rheumatoid arthritis don't have rheumatoid factor positive.
So, okay.
Yeah. And some people even have rheumatoid factor that is positive and they don't have any joint symptoms. So it's all open to interpretation.
Right.
That's why you need a specialist to kind of interpret the symptoms, the blood tests all together. There's another antibody, which is called CCP antibody, and that's more specific. So if you have that, then you're very highly likely to have rheumatoid arthritis. But again, you would need symptoms as well to put that all together.
I mean, is it common for people to be going around not knowing what their symptoms are and finally end up with the right specialist too late?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that a few times as well, which is quite disappointing in a way, I suppose. Like, the problem is as well, primary care physicians sometimes don't recognize rheumatoid arthritis symptoms because people come to GPs, you know, with joint pain, which could be caused by so many different things.
Yes.
But I've seen, you know, patients who I'm the fourth doctor they see. And then I spend 5 minutes and I already know what their problem is. So it's just sad that it takes so long before they finally get to the right specialist.
Yes, and it delays the the treatment by that by that much, doesn't it? We're talking about rheumatoid arthritis today with Dr. Sarina Kemper. She's a consultant rheumatologist and physician with Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. Remember, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio if you have any questions. We'll be right back after a few messages on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show with me, T. Shao-Ik. We're talking about rheumatoid arthritis today with Dr. Sarina Kemper, consultant rheumatologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. Before the break, Dr. Sarina had already explained that rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease. It's basically the immune system attacking itself, and in this case, it's attacking the lining between the joints. And so you would get symptoms like pain, swelling in the joints, stiffness, particularly at night, and and it worsens when you, or you feel it terribly when you wake up in the morning because of that period where you've been not moving. I'm interested to find out about the age of onset, because you've explained, Dr. Serena, that strongly that there needs to be a genetic predisposition and something will happen, like a viral infection or something, to trigger, to switch on that switch that makes the disease sort of flare up. But what is the general, you know, first age of onset?
So the typical time of presentation is during that working age. So, you know, between 40 and 60, actually. Right. Women tend to get it a bit younger. But actually, it can also appear when someone is 14 or even when someone is 80.
Right.
So it can still happen during that time.
Okay, yeah. All right. And does it manifest differently in different age groups?
Not actually. It's quite the same in the way it presents. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter sort of what age it happens at.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, by the way, you can call us at 03-7733-2900 if you have questions for Dr. Serena, or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. I'd like to go into treatment options now, because I think, I mean, you have mentioned and made the point that you can live with rheumatoid arthritis very well if you, number one, detect it early, and number two, get the right form of management. So what are the treatment options that are available?
Yep. So typically when you're diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, we put people on treatment called disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs. Mm-hmm. So that's, in short, it's DMARDs. Okay. That's what we call those. And they affect the immune system. So they try and lower that immune activity that's overreacting to stop the body from attacking itself. So we've got quite a few of these oral DMARDs, and, you know, the oldest one has been around for sort of more than 30 years. And in fact, that one, methotrexate is what it's called, has been the one that's actually revolutionized rheumatoid arthritis treatment,
right,
because we found that it actually helps prevent joint damage. So, but over the years, especially over the last 15 years, we have newer agents, and we call them biologic DMARDs. They are they are made using biotechnology and genetically engineered to act like natural proteins in your immune system. And sometimes we feel that the biologics are better than the traditional DMARDs because they target specific mediators of RA or rheumatoid arthritis inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
So these are available, but they are a bit more expensive, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But at least we have this alternative. But all these medications, they don't cure rheumatoid arthritis. They just slow the disease progression.
Okay. I have read that DMARDs can have potentially serious side effects. What do you tell patients about them, and how do you manage them?
Yeah. So, of course, every medication has its own list of side effects. And I normally explain, you know, everything that could occur so that the patients are just more aware of these side effects. But we have to weigh the risk and the benefits of taking the DMARDs or the medications. The benefits far outweigh the risks of taking it because of what, you know, potentially could happen with rheumatoid arthritis. In fact, because it doesn't actually just affect your joints, it's a systemic disease. It can, if it's not well treated, it can affect your lungs, you know, your eyes, your skin.
Mm-hmm.
It can even reduce your life expectancy by 5 to 10 years.
Right.
It increases your risk of cardiovascular disease. So all that happens as well as, you know, affecting your joints if you really don't treat or look after your rheumatoid arthritis. So in terms of risk and benefit, yes, you know, I feel that the benefits of taking these far outweigh the risks. And for the risks or the side effects, we monitor for those very carefully. We do regular blood tests. We give other medications to try and, you know, counteract some of the side effects. But that's the way to go, really.
Is there anything that can be done, say, if a patient comes in after joint damage has already set in?
So if the joints have already been damaged, if they have erosions on the joints, unfortunately, that part is irreversible. But saying that we can prevent any further joint damage from happening, or trying to preserve what joint function that is still there, that's probably the aim at that point.
And still using the DMARDs to do that. What about sort of, you know, adjuvant therapy that can be done to accompany the oral medications, things like physiotherapy? What's the role of that?
Yep. So physiotherapy or any sort of physical therapy, I suppose, exercise, like we mentioned, yoga, all of that is important to keep you fit and healthy, you know, to make sure that your joints still move, to increase the strength in the muscles that support the joints so your joints don't have to work so hard. That's very important. It helps you lose weight. We know people who are obese tend to respond worse to the medications. It's not as effective. And, you know, you have more load onto your joints if you're obese. So all these physical activities definitely play a role in keeping you nice and, you know, mobile.
So what do you, how do you work with a patient when they've been diagnosed? I mean, do you automatically start them on some form of physical therapy alongside the medications?
So when a patient first comes along to see me, if they have a lot of active and painful and swollen joints, that it's probably not advised to do the physical exercise at that point because it probably makes you feel worse. You have to wait until that acute episode, that pain, that swelling is better. And when it feels better, then you exercise. So we get the rheumatoid under control. There are some short-term medications that we use, like painkillers or anti-inflammatories or even steroid medication that really helps to control the symptoms quickly. And then the DMARDs act in the background as a long-term medication to control the immune system.
Right. William Wong is asking on WhatsApp about the use of stem cells. Can stem cell therapy help or cure rheumatoid arthritis?
There's been, well, a lot of mention of stem cells. Stem cells is a very hot topic for everything.
Everything,
And they think that stem cells can cure everything. But the stance for rheumatologists or rheumatoid arthritis and stem cells is that there isn't enough evidence at this point in time. So I know some people, patients who have opted to go for stem cell therapy, it costs a lot of money. So, I mean, if you have a lot of money, if it's not going to harm you, if you really want to give it a go, you can. But I don't advocate for that because there isn't enough evidence that backs it up.
I mean, in theory, what's the mechanism of stem cell therapy?
Well, they, I guess, will try to reprogram your cells to not express the rheumatoid arthritis.
Right, okay. You know,
but I think it's such a broad and complex pathogenesis behind rheumatoid arthritis that we can't expect to kind of cure it through one measure.
And what about the role of surgery? Is that indicated at all?
So surgery is basically left for when we can't sort of help the joints anymore. So there are a few patients who have had, you know, damage to their knees from their rheumatoid arthritis, which then wears out the knee even further. And then they may need a knee replacement.
Right.
But there's not really any surgery that can, you know, remove the lining of your joints and replace it. It's not, it's because that's not the mechanism. The mechanism is in your whole self.
Yes.
Basically.
Yep. It's systemic, as you say. But do the knees get affected in rheumatoid arthritis?
Yes, they can get affected in rheumatoid arthritis as well.
Okay. Although you did mention it's
mostly hands and feet, but yes, other joints as well.
Okay. We have a caller on the line. Good afternoon, Madeline. You have a question.
Yes. Hi.
Yes, please go ahead.
My name is Madeline. Okay, I've been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis lately. The factor is about 315. Apparently, I'm on the early stages of rheumatoid arthritis. So I would like to know, recently I came across a doctor who says that TEMS machine helps.
Do you know what TEMS stands for, Madeline?
It's a machine where they use magnetic waves on the right and left side. It's supposed to revive the cells, you know, the joints.
Did you say TENS, like TENS?
PEM, okay. M for Malaysia, F for Finland.
TMF, all right, okay.
It is a machine that they actually ask you to lie down. It is run by magnetic waves. And apparently it's supposed to help to revive the cells and the mitochondria in your body.
Yeah, well, to be honest, actually, this is the first time I've heard of this. Mm-hmm. But maybe, I guess, that just explains it, that it's, you know, perhaps it's experimental. The standard rheumatologist hasn't really heard of it. So I'd be doubting whether that is actually a true and tested method of treatment.
Thank you very much, Madeline. We will continue the discussion on air. Thank you for calling. Yes, so, I mean, that does bring me to another question I have, which is when it comes to conditions where there's no cure and where there are no definite answers for it, people are always looking for something that they can explore. So perhaps in the situation of the TEMF machine that Madeline mentioned, it could be in something experimental, but it's not proven in the literature, in the scientific evidence. Are there any other practices that are touted to treat rheumatoid arthritis that you've come across that you'd like to advise them on?
I mean, there's lots and lots of things that people come and tell you, oh, my friend has tried this, or my auntie has taken that. But nothing really has enough evidence. The things that we do know, those medications, the DMARDs, the biologics, we know that they work and they actually can prevent, you know, joint damage in the future. So we go with things that are evidence-based, that we know have worked for hundreds and thousands of people through studies, but not so much any, you know, sort of other types of treatments. Mm. Yeah,
I mean, fish oil supplements is something that people do claim would help. What are your thoughts on that?
Yep. So fish oil is good actually for osteoarthritis, so the wear and tear type of arthritis. And with fish oil, even they've done studies, and there have been a few studies which actually show that it is beneficial in terms of helping with pain from osteoarthritis. So for osteoarthritis, yes, I advocate it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to take it for rheumatoid arthritis, by all means, you know, give it a go. Mm-hmm. But I always tell patients, if it works for you, continue. If it doesn't work for you, then why take something that's expensive that you have to continue taking?
Right, right. With osteoarthritis, the other supplements that they usually take is glucosamine. Would the same principle apply there?
Yeah, so, I mean, glucosamine and chondroitin, that's another very famous one that the drug companies try and tell you that it works. But again, they've actually done also a lot of studies for glucosamine and chondroitin because the drug companies want it to work. They want something else to give to osteoarthritis patients so that they are pain-free. But unfortunately, with even glucosamine and chondroitin, there hasn't been enough evidence.
Right.
It's never statistically good enough for the patients. But so again, I will tell them you can take it if you want to, if it works for you, but don't take it if it doesn't work.
Okay. We're talking about rheumatoid arthritis with Dr. Serena Kemper, consultant rheumatologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. When we come back, we will find out a little bit more about some sort of new research that could potentially give us more indication about the different areas of targeting the disease and what that means for people who are living with rheumatoid arthritis. We'll be back after a few short messages on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao Yik. We're talking about rheumatoid arthritis today with Dr. Serena Kemper, consultant rheumatologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. And we've covered, the common signs of rheumatoid arthritis and gone quite a lot into the treatment options. And really, although there may be a lot out there claiming to treat or cure rheumatoid rheumatoid arthritis, the ones that are proven to work in patients are medications like the DMARDs, the disease-modifying
anti-rheumatic
drugs, and of course, accompanied with physical therapy to help, you know, the functional use of your joints. We have a caller on the line. Good afternoon, Ho. You have a question.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yes, my name is Ho.
Yes.
Okay, recently I have a blood test and I found out that my rheumatic fractals is slightly higher than normal.
And do you know what is the figure?
I think the normal level should be 12 and my one is around 14.
All right, and your question, Ho?
Okay, I would like to know how early should the treatment start? Once you get diagnosed with the RA.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to ask Ho, Dr. Serena, or shall we answer it on
air? Do you actually have any joint pain as such?
Yes. Recently I find myself is a bit tired faster.
Mm-hmm.
It means my energy level is not as good as before.
Mm-hmm.
And also, whenever I wake up in the morning, my hand of my fingers, the joints will be swell out a bit.
Okay.
And some kind of stiffness.
Yeah, yep.
Okay, we'll answer your question on air, Ho. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
So she's asking, when does she need to get treatment?
Yeah. So, I guess the main thing is evaluating whether you actually have rheumatoid arthritis, which is mainly to do with the symptoms. We'd have to look through, go through your history to see whether how long you've had the problem, when is it worse, all of those questions, and then look at the blood tests again. Like the rheumatoid factor on its own, if someone has just a slightly elevated rheumatoid factor, but no symptoms of joint pain whatsoever, we could just monitor that. We wouldn't have to, jump into treatment straight away because we don't treat a blood test. We treat a person as a whole. We treat someone who has the symptoms, evaluate it together with the blood test and whether they actually have any damage. But if you have been diagnosed and confirmed with rheumatoid arthritis, I would start treatment straight away.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a question from Riza on WhatsApp. I have RA, rheumatoid arthritis, and osteoarthritis on both of my knees. Recently, my arms and hands frequently get prolonged numbness, and at times, my fingers twitch nonstop. Are these symptoms related to rheumatoid arthritis?
Mm-hmm. Well, the answer to that is possibly yes and possibly no. Sometimes patients with rheumatoid arthritis can have nerve involvement. So it's again like part of that systemic disease where other organs can get involved as well. But there are other causes to why someone would have numbness in their fingers as well. Do you have any other medical problems? Are you on any other medications? Sometimes even medications can cause the numbness. So I guess in short, it's not a simple question to answer, but it would require like an extensive, evaluation.
Is it cause for concern for Risa?
I would get it looked at for, definitely.
All right. And another question, what is the difference in terms of the treatment for rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis?
Yep. So rheumatoid arthritis and psoriatic arthritis are both under that umbrella of inflammatory arthritis. So the treatment for them, we use a lot of the same medications for treating both rheumatoid and psoriatic arthritis. We use DMARDs and we use biologic DMARDs. Maybe the choice of which one might be slightly different, but the overall, type of treatment is much the same.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Would a person have both at the same time?
You're probably more likely to have one or the other.
Mm.
But I guess the type of treatment is much the same, so it's a bit,
Yes.
It doesn't really matter which one you were diagnosed with because the treatment is quite the same.
All right. And, earlier I said that I wanted to sort of go a little bit into some of the research that's been looking at what's happening in the system when there's rheumatoid arthritis. You do want to touch on a study that's been looking at smoking as a risk factor for the development of rheumatoid arthritis. Perhaps you'd like to talk a bit about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we know that rheumatoid arthritis and smoking have a link. People who smoke, who have rheumatoid arthritis, tend to get it more severe, mm-hmm. tend to get it at an earlier age. So the people who smoke may have worse rheumatoid arthritis. They have more joint damage. People who smoke may clear their drugs more quickly than people who don't smoke.
Oh, right. While they are on treatment. Mm-hmm. If they're smoking while they're on treatment, the medication is not as effective. Is that what you mean?
Could be. Yes,
right.
Correct.
Okay.
So, but the most sort of one of the recent studies from last year showed that even secondhand smoke exposure in children can have an effect when you are older, and even a non-smoker when you're older. The risk of getting rheumatoid arthritis.
Okay.
So that's just makes us think a bit more about, you know, exposing our kids, especially in a family who's got this autoimmune type of history, mm-hmm. To be really wary about the effects of secondhand smoke. Mm,
that's massive. That's really significant.
Yeah.
And it's just, I suppose, it's one simple thing that you can do to cut down the risk. Huge.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you have rheumatoid arthritis, for sure, we always tell patients you have to stop smoking because the effect of smoking itself can drive that inflammatory response.
Okay, all right. There's also a study looking at the B cells that is said to be the culprit behind rheumatoid arthritis. I mean, you know, that, and there's another one looking at a gene called ELMO1 in mice. These kinds of studies, what's the significance on that in terms of, what's going to be the impact for people living with rheumatoid arthritis?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that there's so much research that's going on, and it's still, you know, there's many, 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 many researchers out there who are investigating the causes, the types of treatment. And we've been already investigating all the different cell types, all the cytokines, all involved in the development of rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And they play an important role, and hopefully they are a target for us so that we can specifically target another cell type to treat rheumatoid arthritis to make it effective.
How far down the road is that, though?
During the recent conference that I attended, which was the Asia-Pacific rheumatoid conference in Brisbane, there was huge talks about like developing biomarkers and things that help us identify who works well with a certain type of medication. Or how do we know if someone is going to have the severe type of arthritis versus the not severe type? There's a lot of talk about it, but we're not actually any closer.
right. Well, Krish Rao on WhatsApp is also asking, are there any foods that are good for you or that you should avoid when you have rheumatoid arthritis?
I suppose in terms of food, we talk about a well-balanced diet. We talk about getting food that is, you know, trying to reduce your cholesterol levels. That's good because we know that people who have rheumatoid arthritis that are at a higher risk of heart disease and strokes, so they should avoid high-fat diets, cholesterol-rich foods. And those are the main advice, you know, trying to not be overweight, continue to be active. That's the main advice. But not certain types of food don't really have an effect with autoimmune conditions.
Okay, all right. I mean, in terms of physical activity, because obviously immobility is going to make your joints worse, but is it difficult for patients to manage that when they have stiff joints and, you know, you have to push them to still stay active?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's always a good idea to continue moving. You can join part of a physiotherapy group or any exercise group that helps. But if the joints are very sore, very inflamed, then you have a rest and you don't do things at that time. But when you feel better, to continue, you know, exercising and building strength, basically, in your muscles.
Is there anything that a person with RA should be doing to avoid flare-ups?
Basically, leading a healthy life, doing as much for yourself as you can, avoiding smoking, now avoiding passive smoking, you know, eating well, exercising, those are the main types of things.
The general principles. General
thing. But you'd be surprised as to how many people say, oh, I can't stop smoking, oh, I can't lose weight. But actually, those are the things that the patient themselves can do and should be doing.
All right. Here's an interesting question. I guess it's a little bit of a deviation, but, you know, Stephen's asking on WhatsApp, I've noticed an increasing number of people using walking sticks. They seem to be in their late 50s onwards. What could be the cause? I just thought it's interesting. I mean, we are living in a society, in a population that's getting older.
Yeah. Well, probably many causes to that, isn't it? Back pain, you know, joint pain.
Anything,
Anything really. But I guess the main thing is that you shouldn't, if you are using a walking stick, why are you using a walking stick is the question. Like, you need to get it looked at. Could it be a problem in your back? Could it be a problem in your hip? Could it be a problem in your knees or feet? Or what is the main cause? Could you have back pain that's inflammatory, like ankylosing spondylitis? Do you need to be on treatment? So that's the question you should be asking when you see someone who has, you know, who is walking with a walking stick.
Are you doing something, or are you trying to find out what is the cause of this?
Don't
this
just
disability.
Ignore these symptoms, you know. Someone is out there who can help you.
Okay. All right. You know, do you have some final advice about, perhaps we can revisit again, what would be the red flags for rheumatoid arthritis and where can people go?
Yep. So if you ever have any joint pain that is new, that is progressive, it continues to get worse, you have any joint pain, swelling, stiffness, if you are finding it difficult to sleep at night, don't ignore these symptoms. You know, see your GP or see a rheumatologist, but see someone to try and get an answer as to why this is happening.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Sarina. That was Dr. Sarina Kempe, a consultant rheumatologist and physician from Thompson Hospital, Kota Damansara. We've been talking about rheumatoid arthritis. You're listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.